Welcome to a very exciting episode of Extra Features Interviews. Today I have a fabulous guest, David Rosen, who's got the best sound, I would say, of any podcast I've ever heard. So I know we're going to get into that today. He doesn't have any film to promote, but he has a fabulous website. So just Google David Rosen. You'll find an amazing assortment of podcasts he produces, talks about, and his music is incredible too. So it's all there. Go check it out, people. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, and I hope I sound good during the interview.
Oh, I'm sure you sound amazing. Let's start right there. Like, how do you get your sound, like, crystal clear? I was so impressed by – I was listening – hold on. Let's give your podcast, Bird Something.
Piecing It Together is my main podcast. That's the one that I host myself and produce. I also co-host Bird Road, which is another podcast I do with my friend. I also produce, and occasionally I'm on mic on Awesome Movie Years. So I do a bunch of different podcasting stuff. And, you know, to answer your question, I think that, you know, the main way is by just doing. I just do so much, you know, audio related work. And each time I do it, I kind of strive to, you know, tweak things a little and get it to be better and better as I go. And I think I'm kind of dialed in a little bit with what I've been doing.
I would totally back you up. Now, does it upset you listening to a podcast? You're like, I really should email these guys and go, I can fix your sound. This is what you guys are doing wrong. You need this mic, this setup. Or maybe I was thinking, because I was looking for your site, there was no tutorial on how to set everything up. And I'm like, with your sound, you really should be doing that. Just going, hey guys, come to my site, listen to this for half an hour, follow my instructions, and just put a donation in my box.
Sure. Yeah, I probably should do something like that. I have been hired to help produce podcasts before, and you know, I've been hired for some consulting and stuff like that before. But yeah, I could totally, you know, maybe that'll, you know, go on the to-do list. One of the many things for me to do in the future is put together some kind of tutorial thing on the site. But, you know, along with composing music for podcasts as well, it would, I guess, just add to my list of things I do.
Yeah, like I was going through your site and I encourage this to everybody. You have an immense topics and things to look at. Do you have free time of any kind?
No, never. Never, ever. You know, and especially, you know, with Piecing It Together, it's like I have to, you know, I watch new movies. And the concept of Piecing It Together is we look at a new movie through the lens of what other movies might have inspired it. So I not only have to watch that new 2-hour movie that the episode is featured on, but watch a lot of old movies, too, to kind of get ideas for what might have inspired it. So, yeah, I'm either podcasting or making music or watching movies or sleeping.
Okay. Let's go back to the movie watching, because that's something I can relate to. I mean, sure. How many movies do you watch a week? Or do you decide if you've – or what movies are you going to watch that week? Because let's start with Halloween. Your newest episode is Halloween Kills.
Sure.
How many films did you have to watch in the Halloween genre? Or did you watch films outside the Halloween genre for that?
Luckily, a lot of it was, you know, existing information, things that I had watched over the years that I was able to go back to and be able to bring that up, as we call them, puzzle pieces. So it didn't require me to watch a ton just specifically for that episode, but definitely I'm watching many, many movies a week for sure, and many, many, many movies a year. I you know, a lot of people will, you know, talk about how many movies they watch in a year. And I definitely think I'm kind of on the high end of that, but I don't really have a set number or anything like that. I just, wherever I could fit them in, you know, with Awesome Movie Year, I'm also watching a lot of movies for that as well, because, you know, even though I'm just the producer on that show, I like to at least be, you know, active in the conversation a little bit and know what they're talking about. So that way, when it comes time to edit what they're talking about, I can kind of, you know, be a part, at least on that side of the conversation. And so, yeah, there's always something to be watching when you're doing this stuff.
Well, I want to do ask for your number, because as you know, you follow me on Twitter and I do a Twitter review every day for 10 years. So that's 36,050 movies, roughly. I've maybe missed a few days here and there. So I'm at least 365. And that would not include any independent films I watch, because I do not review those, any shorts I watch, or any films I just somehow don't review.
Yeah.
So I'm probably over the 400 mark a year.
Okay.
So I'm really going to test you. I want to know your number because I want to I don't meet many people that can beat me, and I love people that can't.
I got to say, I think you might have me beat because I'm probably in the 3 to 4 range. So,
yeah, so we're around the, probably the same.
Yeah, I think so. You definitely are up there with me. And, I don't know how many, non-film people you talk to about this stuff, but most do not watch these kinds of numbers.
Yeah. Here's a question you get as a film person. I always get a friend of yours, it's just happens to be at home. They're like, hey, it's Friday night. What do you recommend? And I'm always like, do you want a new movie? Do you want a movie 20 years ago? And I find that as a movie person, the hardest question to answer.
Oh yeah.
And it's how so do you, true. So let's start there. What new movie would you suggest this year for people to watch? And what movie that nobody's ever heard of you would suggest for people to watch? I'll put you on the spot.
Yeah, it is always the hardest thing. I was just joking the other day about this, that on my podcast, I always end the episode by asking the guest for a recommendation. And every time, without fail, it's like, oh my God, what have I watched recently? Like, I can't remember a single movie, even though I'm watching movies constantly. I can't remember anything I watched. A movie from this year that I love, and it's not everyone's cup of tea. I should definitely say that before saying the name of the movie. Not everybody loves it, but I did, is Malignant from James Wan, which is the most ridiculous, over-the-top, silly horror movie of the year, but really of a long time. I'm a big fan of horror comedies, and some people don't believe that it's a horror comedy. Some people think it's just a quote-unquote bad horror movie, no. And I think they completely miss the point, and that this is in the tradition of the Evil Dead movies, of like Shaun of the Dead, movies that celebrate horror but are definitely supposed to be funny.
I think so, too. Come on.
Yeah.
When you watch certain people move in a certain way, like, yes, you got to take it for what it is. I think Malignant's a fabulous choice.
Awesome.
Now, the one – so we're going to impress me now. We're going to force you. Name a film that you suggest you think I haven't seen. That's your go-to. I'm going to hey, David, I'm stuck this week. I need another film. Simon from Extra Features, nobody believe you. But I'm going to ask you anyway for a film.
All right. I'm going to go with – you know what? I'm going to go with my favorite movie from last year, which not many people saw. It's called Francis Ferguson. Have you ever heard of that one?
I've never heard of it. I'm impressed. There you go. You know what? You'll see a review on it soon because I will watch it.
It's Francis, a weird one. It's another not for everyone movie. Let me just say that.
But I'll watch it.
I think it's a great movie though. So
let's pick up from there. You've watched Francis Ferguson. I haven't heard of it. So you know now I'm going to watch it, being a movie cinephile to the ninth degree. Now, how does that make you feel? You're like, sweet, this guy's going to watch it. Now, are you worried now if I'm going to enjoy it? Or you don't care? You've just put it out there and said, that's what he's watching.
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. I want people to enjoy the movies that I recommend on the show and just in general conversations. And yeah, and it sucks when people don't like the movies that you love. You know, you really want to share that love with people. And it doesn't always work out that way, especially when you like weird movies.
Now, here's a great movie question for you. When you're going into expectations, I'm going to pick Dune because that's a big film for me, reading all the books.
Mm-hmm.
If you went into Dune and you were excited about Dune because it's been 2 years it was supposed to come out and you've read about it and you absolutely hate it, how do you feel at the end of that? Do you even want to talk about it or you're that crushed?
You know what? Spoiler alert for our Piecing It Together episode that I'll be recording later this week, but I did not like Dune. Now, I'm not a fan of the – like, I don't know the books. I didn't read the books. Like, I'm, of course, aware of them. But, I'm not, like, a big super fan or anything like that. I have a feeling people who know the Dune story will probably get more out of the movie. To me, it was just 2 hours of loud noise and big, spectacle, but without much in the way of character. And so it just didn't do that much for me. That being said – It is difficult to talk about movies that you don't really like, especially when you're doing a podcast and you got to, do 30, 40 minutes of talking about this movie. And it's like, I just want to move on to the next thing. There's so many movies to cover, especially, I do both big mainstream movies and indie films. So there's constantly movies worth covering. And it's like, I didn't even like this movie. Why bother? But luckily with our whole format of looking at the movies that might have inspired it, it at least opens up a different way to talk about them. And so it kind of still makes it worthwhile, even if you didn't like the movie.
Well, I got a spoiler alert for you. I've been watching French Dispatch and
I haven't seen
it yet. I don't know how to react to French Dispatch. I'm still undecided whether I saw a masterpiece or a film I hate it.
That's what I keep hearing. A lot of people don't seem to like it. Yeah,
I'm leaning to – people are going to be shocked. I haven't even done my Twitter review. I honestly haven't even formulated a full thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a huge Wes Anderson fan. Like,
me too.
God to me. And I'm like, ooh, this is like jarring limited to me again, which I did not like. And I'm like, oh, this is killing me.
Oh, well, I'll be seeing it next week. I can't wait.
I'm not going to say anything more. So as you've watched all these films, hundreds and hundreds of films, and you're a filmmaker doing musical soundtracks for something, I bring you, say, hey, David, I need a scene. This is what's going on. So I've sent you. Do you get the film ahead of time or do I give you a concept? How does that process work for you?
Every film that I've worked on has been different in that regard. There's been some where I'm working on music for this. It was going to be a short film and now it's turned into a feature, luckily, because it's great to work on features. But this one I actually worked on ahead of time. They just described everything that's going to be happening. I worked on the music so they could actually shoot with the music already created for the purpose of actually being in the scene. And it worked out awesome. But normally I would say I mostly get the finished film ahead of time and start actually scoring to picture. I've worked on about probably like 10 now feature films and dozens and dozens and dozens of short films. And also web series and TV shows and commercials, all kinds of other, you know, visual media, video games, you know, but everything definitely is different. It just depends on what process I'm brought in, what point in the process I'm brought in.
Okay, let's back this up. Okay, got a lot there I want to compact. Mm-hmm. So do you prefer to come in as a blank slate? Like I just give you a concept. Hey, I do a movie podcast about movies. That's all you know. You don't know me. I've just sent you a blank email saying, hey, I want to hire you to do that. So what do you do? Do you ask me questions? Do you like, no, I think I got some ideas. I mean, how do you get to the actual song, I guess, or what you call a composition?
Yeah, I definitely am the kind of composer that likes the blank slate approach. You know, certainly if the director or whoever it is wants to, you know, throw a couple ideas my way, you know, various scores that they, you know, like that maybe they kind of had in mind or whatever when they were writing the project. That's fine, but my favorite way to work is just lock me in a room and I just start coming up with things that fit, you know, and it's almost sometimes just feels like a puzzle. Like you're just kind of putting things together and seeing what works. And once things do start to work, it starts to grow from there and it builds from there. And that's like my favorite thing about doing music for film is watching as those things all just kind of fit together.
Now I'm going to go to commercials and then I want to go back and discuss instruments for a second. Now running for commercial, usually about 30 seconds. You can correct me if I'm wrong, I would guess.
Yeah, 30 seconds a minute, something like that usually.
So your music kind of has to blend. So, I mean, you probably do see a commercial ahead of time, I would think. If I'm selling dog food and I want you to write a commercial, like, do you always try to write it upbeat so the dog is moving or the cat is moving or the people are happy? Because, I mean, I don't know what you're writing commercials for. I mean, it could be for a protein bar. So
right.
You got to enjoy eating it. So how do you get the music to fit that mood?
Yeah, it's usually I do have the film in front of me. And so that way I can kind of, you know, feed off of that, you know, off of what's happening on the screen. But otherwise, it's just a matter of like, man, what would this commercial look like? What would it sound like? What would it, you know, feel like? And I kind of got to just conjure that up somehow. And it can be difficult sometimes, especially because naturally when I work on music, and this is reflected in a lot of the work I've done, I'm not sure what all you've heard so far, but I do tend to gravitate towards darker stuff like horror films and drama and things like that. So then when I need to, you know, come up with, like you said, if I was going to do like a dog food commercial, it would obviously need to be a little bit peppier and more fun and more upbeat. And then I'm kind of like swimming upstream, you know, trying to get there rather than make things dark and depressing and sad and the things that I do like to work on.
So that's why you're definitely in the video game genre. Like Resident Evil would be up your alley, I'd be thinking here. Or maybe a Metal Gear Solid or something with aliens. Like lots of mass killing, I guess, is what I'm trying to say
here. Sure, absolutely. And I haven't worked on any games in a while. It's been fun working on games, but most of my work has been in film. But yeah, definitely when you do that stuff, it's like, you know, heavy and driving and, you know, that kind of stuff, like big and, you know, epic.
So I listen to a lot of your music, and I got to say, I'm not really into symphony music, but I did enjoy it. I kind of got the sound you're going for. So I definitely did feel it sounded like to me it was Halloween music a lot of the time, very dark and sure. Like I should just put this on for trick-or-treaters when they come over. That's probably freak them out. So, and I was also listening to your podcast. I noticed Halloween came up and Michael Myers is your favorite. So how big an influence is John Carpenter to you then?
Oh my God. Yeah, absolutely. I love his music so much. And when my first album of instrumental music came out, it's called Echoes in the Dark. It was 2013. The local paper here in Las Vegas, the Las Vegas Review Journal, they reviewed it and they said that it unfolds like a lost John Carpenter score. And I was like, nice. Oh my God, I should just stop my career right now. Like done, finished, you know?
So with the local paper, do you get all excited because your mom's excited and everybody's excited? Do you really get a lot of sales from that, or you're just like, cool, somebody cares?
Nobody buys music anymore, so no. But, you know, at least hopefully more people heard it because of that. You know, people stream the music on, you know, all my albums are available on Spotify and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, hopefully it all, you know, leads to, you know, getting more ears on my music. And I love working on films and podcasts and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, I want people hearing my music. And my albums are a way for getting my music out there in a way that people can just listen to. I also collaborate with filmmakers on music videos for some of the tracks from my albums, and so those I've been able to get into various film festivals around the world and stuff like that. And so those are all ways of getting people to hear what it is I do rather than just make it and then listen to it in my car, which I also enjoy, but you know, I still want other people to hear it.
How long does it take you to produce the first piece of music for anything? A week, a day, or it all depends on what you're doing?
It definitely all depends on what I'm doing, but I do tend to work fairly quick because even though, like you said, I had like the symphonic, you know, style and some of what you heard, like my music definitely blends a lot of genres, but at my core, I'm mostly an electronic composer. And so because I'm working with software and synths and a computer at the center of everything that I do, it does make it a lot quicker for the way that I work. And so, yeah, usually by the end of my first, you know, few hours of working on something, I'm already like digging deep in, unless I'm having some bad writer's block, which luckily doesn't happen too often. But usually I'm really like kind of like digging in pretty deep by the end of that first day.
Now, here's a question. If you go to the gym or you go for a walk, and you have writer's block, does that help you at all? Or what's your way to get through writer's block? I mean, that's what I'm basically asking.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, the only two ways really are, you know, taking a break, like you said, going to the gym, taking a walk, going watching a movie maybe.
Yeah.
Or just, you know, hit save, hit close, and open a new project and work on something else. So start making some other music that maybe will turn into a track from one of my upcoming albums or, you know, whatever. But work on music that's not for the thing that I'm supposed to be working on at the moment, and then just come back to that thing later.
So you can just, I guess, not being a musician, it's that easy just to click on and off for you.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe that's not the way everybody works. But for me, it's like, you know, just as long as I'm locked in there and the door's closed and my focus is on that computer in front of me and my keyboard and trying to come up with melodies and rhythms and things that sound interesting and go together, then yeah, I mean, I just love doing it.
Okay. Well, you're on this walk. You're going to know where we're going to go in a second. You have a podcast that's very political on your Bird Road podcast. Mm-hmm. Very, very political. I did listen to it for a bit.
Yeah.
Do you read the news while you walk? Do you listen to other podcasts or news? Because, I mean, you guys get into this stuff. Let's get into a little bit of that. I mean, I would call you definitely an American at that point, if that makes any sense. I'm sure Canadians do it, but I've never heard a Canadian podcast get that much into Canadian politics. Like, sure. You guys are hardcore into this. Like, you guys are not just reading the highlights. You're getting really into deep. Like, some guy getting in Jackson for COVID, but he was getting for something else, and then you guys go on. I'm like, that is intense stuff to me. That involves a lot more research than what you were telling us earlier.
It's all such a bummer, really. That's what it comes down to. But yeah, it's definitely more my best friend Q, who is the other host on Bird Road, and who we kind of got into podcasting together. Piecing it together itself grew from Bird Road. It was like something that I was always bringing movies into the conversation, and I finally decided to just make my own movie podcast. But yeah, he's definitely more of the politics guy, and he drags me kicking and screaming into those conversations. And I certainly pay attention and stay involved in, you know, what's going on in the world. But at the same time, I'd rather just watch movies.
Well, I'm not letting you go that easily, because I did listen to a few. Now, your friend Q, like, he's bringing to me the attack on the Capitol. Politics aside, you guys must have had quite a conversation about the attack on the Capitol.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it keeps going. The conversation's never going to freaking end.
So how does that feel? I mean, you're trying to bring a movie conversation. Q's like, no, we're not. We're discussing this guy dressed up as X and how he got in, and he's wandering around. And next week, you're reading about something else that happened, and you're going back to that, obviously. How does that feel? Like, how do you get into that, which you're telling me? I'm not saying you're not passionate. I'm saying you'd rather discuss the new movie that came out. And Q's like, nope, we're staying here.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's... You know, the thing is he's my best friend, and I just love, you know, he lives across the country. He lives in Miami. He used to be here in Las Vegas, and I just love spending an hour on Zoom talking to him. And so if it has to be some depressing stuff like COVID and the fall of our country and all the terrible things that are happening, that's what we're going to talk about. And that works for me as long as we're hanging out on mic.
I know how that feels. Now, do you guys ever discuss politics around the world? Or do you ever get into Russian politics or China or even Australia, for that matter, or Japan's COVID crisis?
Yeah, I sometimes it definitely comes from places outside of America. It just depends what the main kind of major topics are of the moment or what we're going to end up talking about on that show. A lot of our stuff does kind of center back to how does to either Las Vegas or Miami, our two cities. But as long as there's some way to like kind of tie it back, it could end up coming up on the show.
Okay, fair enough. Now, you guys are in two different places. I mean, you got to deal with COVID. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I mean, Florida is 100 times different, I presume, than Vegas. Since being in Canada, I read nothing about Vegas other than it's Vegas. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a hockey fan. I read a lot about the Golden Knights. I read a lot about football stuff. And I know general stuff. I mean, I know Vegas isn't just a strip. I know people actually have to work in Somerset, I think it is.
Summerlin. Yeah.
Summerlin. Sorry, I knew it was summer something.
Close.
But things like that. So he's in Miami. Like, he's a hotbed of everything to me. Oh, I mean, beautiful Art Deco. He's got a beautiful beach. He's got a crazy governor. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you guys find a common ground? Or you guys disagree because he's from Vegas?
Yeah, I think we both have very similar sensibilities and, you know, the things that we find funny, the things that we find just mind-blowingly awful about the world. And you know, Vegas and Miami, they're both kind of, well, I should say Nevada and Florida are more of like purple states. And so it definitely... we just have there's a lot of warring interests in both of our states. So it kind of makes for, there's constantly something happening within the world of politics.
That's awesome. Now, do you guys agree on Michael Myers? Because he's your favorite, you said in a podcast.
Well, it was my guest who loves Michael Myers. I love John Carpenter specifically, not so much Michael Myers. Dave Q is not the biggest horror movie guy, but he definitely agrees with me on Malignant, though. I think Malignant's his favorite movie of the year so far. So we at least have that.
Now, let's get a little bit more of the Halloween discussion. Is Halloween 3 a Michael Myers movie or not?
I guess, at its core, it still is, you know, but I actually haven't watched the originals in so long, other than the first one, which I rewatched right before the 2018 reboot. I haven't watched the other sequels since like high school. Well, it's been a long time.
Is Michael Myers is in it. In three. He's in the back putting stock in shelves. So,
right.
I mean, I got to argue, a serial killer needs to make some money to eat occasionally.
Right.
Like, sure. I mean, he's got to eat. I got it. He's working in this crazy guy's factory. Probably fits in perfectly there.
Yeah. Well, personally, I got to admit, I'm a Jason guy. That's my
we'll
guy
get there when next. It comes
to the slashers.
Okay. So, fine. Well, just, okay. Who would you rather have watching? So you'd rather watch a Jason film with the body count over Halloween. So you just want bodies hitting the floor then.
I want bodies and I want ridiculousness. I want it to make me laugh, you know?
Well, Jason does do that a lot. He seems to be very busy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after number five, I can't remember. I'm going to get confused. Jason becomes a zombie in my world.
Yeah, absolutely.
So he's an unstoppable killing machine. And I think it's number 9, they finally kill Jason, and then he becomes a spirit.
Yeah, yeah, and he transfers from person to person at that point. And by the way, there's also a little Easter egg. I mean, people say it's not really canon, but he's basically a Deadite from the Evil Dead series.
Is he?
Well, they show the Necronomicon in the basement of, I believe it's Jason's mom's basement back at the house, and... So, I mean, some people have put two and two together and said Jason may or may not be an actual Deadite.
Okay. So what I'm going to go to, is 9 the worst Jason film there is or not?
I don't think it is. I think it's actually pretty fun. I would take really, really stupid Jason over just kind of bland Jason of like 2. I'm not really a big fan of 2. And then I think it's 4 was the kind of just... worstest one, but they're so all over the place, you know. Jason X is pretty great too. I mean, it's so ridiculous. Yeah.
My argument is Jason's got to be the smartest guy in movies. He's an archer. He can throw a hammer. He can throw an axe. He carves people up faster than anybody else does in any other film. He doesn't matter what he kills you with, he'll do it.
Yeah.
I got to give Jason full credit on his marksmanship skills.
Oh yeah, yeah. He can do it all. He can do it all. And then and then you go to Freddy versus Jason, and he really is like the heart of the movie.
Yes.
So it's like you start to feel a little bit of empathy for the big guy. You know.
Well, I think you got to feel empathy for Jason. He died in 1950 by accident. Like nobody really wanted him to die because all these teenagers were supposedly making out, not watching him. My argument is, what was his mom doing? Like she brought her special need son to this camp that obviously did not have facilities for him.
Yeah.
Like he should not have been near a lake. Let's start right there.
Yeah.
Like I'm saying he should have been in an area that he could have been contained and have one-on-one individual helping him out.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back. What was she thinking to bring him to that camp originally is what I want to know. I understand she needed to work. Now, couldn't she have a room off the side with Jason in it?
Some parents, they just, they just don't do a very good job. I'm sure once the rights issues are cleared up, they're probably going to reboot that again. And we'll get a deeper, darker look into the negligent parenting of Jason's mom.
Well, I think she's the unlost character. I mean, we really need a more Voorhees movie. Like, what's going on there with this? What happened in his home life? Like,
yeah.
I don't think he was always this way. I think he was abused. Maybe that's what happened with the father. She's trying to hide out in the camp from him. We could do a whole good backstory to help him out here.
Yeah, I think that story could be interesting. I mean, of course, when are these reboots ever necessary? But I think it could at least be interesting.
Well, that one's necessary. We've seen him carve up everybody on the planet.
Yeah.
I mean, speaking of – so if we're going to get into horror movies on the show, I like to discuss – what do you think of Troll?
You know what? Believe it or not, because I know it has such a great reputation for being one of these like ridiculous, fun horror movies that I would love. I've never seen it.
Okay, Leprechaun franchise. There's about 7 of them now.
Yeah, not since high school, but those were always a lot of fun back in the day.
Wrong Turn with some hillbillies?
Very much enjoyed the first Wrong Turn. I don't think I saw any of the sequels, the direct-to-video sequels. I heard that the most recent one was really good, though. That came out like last year.
I hated it. Watch really? Four. Watch The Origins of the Hillbillies. It's probably okay. My favorite one. That's number four.
Okay.
And you get the origins of them. So you get to discover how they became what they are.
All right. That sounds fun.
I will definitely give that a recommend. And I guess we can't leave Freddy off the table.
Mm-hmm. Which and I'm Chucky. Hoping – I only have 6 days left. I was hoping to do a Freddy rewatch marathon before Halloween. I don't know if I'll get to it, but I'm going to try.
So do you like the Freddy films overall? Have you seen them all?
Those are all – I'm sure I saw them all in high school. I haven't seen any of them except the first one recently, though. I'm really looking forward to rewatching them. I love that kind of just silly over-the-top gore, and so I think I would really enjoy my rewatch of it. I just haven't had a chance to do it yet.
And the last one I have to – Evil Dead, we're not going to discuss because we all love Evil Dead.
But my favorite movie.
Chucky. Chucky comes to your house, tries to kill you. How fast are you taking out Chucky?
Honestly, I probably just die immediately just because I'd be so scared. The idea of a killer doll definitely is something that gets to me.
I figure one shot in the nuts and he's gone.
He should just be.
Oof him. Like, just why does nobody set him on fire?
Yeah.
Literally just lock him in your wood stove and let him burn.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I actually did do some music for a killer doll movie, and that was very scary to do. It's called Heidi. It's available on Amazon Prime, and it's kind of like a found footage killer doll movie.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's an interesting movie, and it's only a little bit of music because obviously it being found footage, you don't want to score the whole thing because that would make no sense. But within the confines of the movie, it makes sense, the little bit of music that's in there. And yeah, no, those things freak me out a little bit.
So let's back up to Heidi then.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you must have been in a horror movie. I love horror movies. So Heidi mm-hmm. comes to you. How is scoring something you love? Like, this is obviously an independent picture. They know your music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's always really fun to work on kinds of movies that I really love. I mean, one of my favorite things that I scored is actually a short film called Croak. And it's basically about this guy who brings home these chemicals and accidentally gets them on these frogs, and they turn into big giant mutant frogs. And it's got great practical effects and really over the top gore. And it's really, really fun. And I got to go like really big and silly and over the top with the score for it. And it's a really fun one. There's a clip of it in my reel on my website, so you can check out a clip from the film. I'm not sure if the whole thing is online. I think it is. I think it's on YouTube. But working on something like that is just so much fun because you just get to be a part of something that you actually straight up enjoy.
So what do you see yourself doing in the future? Do you see yourself even taking on more podcasts? Do you see yourself maybe adding vocals to your music, or that's something that's never going to happen?
I'm not really too big on doing vocals with my music. It could potentially happen at some point, some kind of like side project or something like that. But for now, I'm going to stick mostly with instrumental. I definitely want to do more in the world of podcasting. I'd like to do a narrative podcast at some point. That's something where I could, you know, tell a story and then also score it, you know, myself. I think it would be a really big and time consuming project to take on, but I think it would be a fun and rewarding thing to work on. I want to score more features, of course, and continue doing piecing it together because I love doing it. And, you know, Bird Road has been a little, it's been on a bit of a hiatus the last month or so, but we're actually planning on recording on Monday, this coming Monday. So that'll just keep popping back up and going away. Whenever we have the energy to discuss politics, we'll continue doing that.
Well, maybe you could help me out. Are midterms coming up in a few months? Is that should be a big topic for you guys?
Yeah, I guess we could talk about that. God, that's going to be depressing too.
Well, being Canadian, I listen to a bit of American I find it funny. You guys, politics is just, I honestly will say, insane for us. 24/7, 365 days. I'm convinced Fox News and CNN have something on Christmas on whatever they're doing.
Yeah, probably, just to keep us all going nuts.
Yeah, that's great. Well, now our favorite time of the show that everybody loves. It's your three-question time.
Okay.
So because you're first time on the show, everybody gets the same first question. The other two are just random. So you can never for props. Just so you know. Your favorite film, please, and why?
My favorite film is Adaptation, from Charlie Kaufman and Spike Jones, starring Nicolas Cage. And why is a little bit harder, but I just think that everything that it gets into with the themes about love and what love means are so important. But then also, of course, Nicolas Cage is just incredible playing Charlie Kaufman himself, as well as his maybe, maybe not fictional twin brother, Donald. And it's just, it's the funniest, just best and darkest and just most amazing movie.
Fair enough. Now, because you're a composer, this might be a little bit harder. And you can't pick John Carpenter because we know that would be your first go-to. Mm-hmm. Your favorite soundtrack?
Oh, man. Yeah, that is a difficult one. I'm of all time. I don't know because it's so difficult because there's so many different like eras. Give me a few then. Give me a styles.
Few. Okay, let's pick a good era. Let's pick the big band sounds of the 40s, 50s.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to go that far back, but if I'm going to go with like one classic, I'm going to go with Jurassic Park just because it's just so incredibly memorable and fun and beautiful.
Make me feel old, you know, because I saw it in theaters. Yeah, I was there. Jurassic Park isn't old to me, but it really is.
No, I said not old. Okay. Yeah,
I do feel old though when people go, oh, Jurassic Park, especially when someone my daughter's age.
I was 13
goes,
at the time, but
I was a little bit older than you.
Yeah, but that's a classic. I mean, of recent movies, I'm a really big fan of the Ex Machina score, which was a big influence on. I just released a soundtrack album called The Dissection Table, and that soundtrack was a big influence on me for composing that score.
Well, that's great. Now, the last one is going to be hard too, probably. One actor you would love to work with?
Going right back to Nicolas Cage, man. I mean, how could I not want to work with Nicolas Cage?
You could work with Nicolas Cage. He's doing a lot of B pictures, I find. So you probably may end up in your lap one day.
I think it'll happen, really. And he lives here, by the way, here in Las Vegas. So, I mean, it's got to happen eventually. But that's a definite that would be so much fun to score something with him.
Just because I'm interested in your answer to the last question, which is not my list just because we're talking. Mm-hmm. Do you garage sale to look for films you've never seen?
I don't have time to. I should, you know, but there's always something that I'm watching that, like, I don't even have time to go, like, out there and look in that way. So, no, I would say no, I don't. We also, by the way, I mean, it's a whole side conversation, but my family has a record store here in Las Vegas called Wax Trax, and I work there during the day as well, and movies come in through the store all the time.
Oh, well, selling us their used movies.
So there's that too. I mean, that's kind of a similar answer to that question, that there's always these movies coming in through the store that I could pop on and watch.
So hold on. I want to back up to this store thing. You kind of just dropped this the last second.
Sure.
Tell me more about the store. Like, what do you guys sell? Because I love going to anything. Like, I go to secondhand stores. I go garage sales. I go to flea markets. I go to Facebook Market, but I'm always looking for that. So when I go to Wax Trax, obviously I'm expecting records. Wax Trax.
Yep.
Maybe do you guys still carry tapes, CDs?
All of it. Yeah, memorabilia as well, and really just everything music related. And it's three floors. It's practically like a museum, really. And it's definitely more of a collector's shop than like a used record store. You know, we have really hard to find stuff, and people come from like all over the world to like look at it's my dad's basically his personal collection.
Hold on, let's get some more. Website, address, hours. Come on.
There's a website, waxtraxonline.com, but it's basically just an advertisement for the store. We don't have like a online inventory or anything like that. And it's also on Facebook, Wax Trax Records on Facebook. So I post little my dad's little catchphrases and silly things he says at the store. He's a character. He's like an old New Yorker type, and people love the stuff that he says. So I post them on there. But yeah, it's here in Las Vegas, 2909 South Decatur Boulevard, and people should definitely come check it out. It's like stepping into, like I said, like a museum. It's just everywhere you look, you literally have to walk over piles of records. That's how much stuff packed in.
If I make it, I'm coming. You have my word if I ever make it to Vegas. Now, hang on. You've just said you don't have used stuff, but you say you get movies in. So those must be used movies.
It's definitely in there. There are, but we kind of – it comes in, we filter out and kind of, you know – resell the stuff that we don't want to keep on the shelves, and the stuff that is more collectible basically is what stays on the shelves. And so that's why the things that are actually on the shelves and are there for our big customers, those are more collectible things. But definitely the things you're going to be walking over trying to get to those things are going to be stuff that just recently came in, and it's a constant in and out of stuff, just records.
You got me so CDs. Jealous. I don't live within even a 2-hour drive of Vegas, or I'd be there tomorrow.
So much. There's so much stuff in there that literally my dad at the end of most days will put piles outside and people are allowed to just take it, because we just don't have the room for how much stuff he manages to come across.
I'd be there. Okay, I'm going to let people into my world. I'm a mailman. I literally tell you, keep me all the DVDs. I will take anything guys are throwing out just so I can look through it and see if I needed anything. Well, that's awesome. I want to say, guys, go to Wax Tracks, because you might find me there one day. I will wear my Extra Features podcast shirt, I promise, when I come. David, thank you for your time. Please tell everybody again, besides waxtracks.com, I presume, because it's American.
Waxtracksonline.com.
Yeah. Go there. Tell everybody where they can find all your stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Piecing It Together is my podcast. You can check it out, piecingpod.com, and follow me on Twitter at piecingpod. And for my music, you can check out bydavidrosen.com. And of course, I'm available on Spotify and all those places to listen to all of my music, including my new album, The Deception Table.
I want to thank you for your time. You're awesome. I somehow have this weird feeling we're going to hook up again at some point in our lives.
Yeah.
Thank you again for your time, and have a great night.
Thank you, man.